Hello, good afternoon. This is John. You're listening to the Kill Radio Tuesday News. What is today? Tuesday. It's one of those days. February 14th. It's Valentine's Day. That's why I can't remember anything. It's the only thing that's on my mind right now is how I'm going to impress my girlfriend later. So, Iraq body count for today. Number of civilians reported killed by military intervention in Iraq from IraqBodyCount.net. Minimum 28,403. Maximum 32,013.
Hail to the scumbag, the motherfucking president. Fucking piece of shit.
I'm joined today by Art from the Indie Media Center, where we are lucky enough to broadcast Kill Radio through their offices. Art, how you doing? Here you go.
Yeah, good. How are you?
So for those of who might be listening to Kill Radio for the first time or might be introducing themselves to activism for the first time, what is the Indie Media Center? What's indiemedia.org?
Well, Indie Media is basically an online interactive news wire and news center, where we produce news and display items, both published by outside reporters as well as editors of Indie Media online. Here in L.A., we've been doing it since 2000, since the Democratic Convention, or the lead-up to the convention. The actual Indie Media movement started with the Battle of Seattle in 1999, and they decided that they wanted to get what was going on in the streets out to the world. It wouldn't be covered, they didn't think, well by and accurately by the corporate media, especially since you know the object of the protest was corporations. It was unlikely that the corporations
were going to send
would
out
accurately
their
report what was being protested against themselves. So
right,
they decided, well, we'll start an online, you know, now that we have that technology, newsletters out and with video and audio streaming at times, as well as of course photos and print, and that's what started the movement. And when they got that formatted here on the West Coast, it spread. New York City was quick to pick up. Philadelphia was going to be the site of the 2000 Republican convention, and that started that movement. And of course, as I said, L.A., the 2000 convention, we got people from all over the country that was coming out for that to cover the protest and the movement involved in that. And we decided that we wanted to keep it on everywhere. And in fact, it's grown to over 100 cities. Of course, Kill Radio also came out of that. Kill Radio originated as the audio portion, the online on web broadcast of the protest of the Democratic Convention.
So the idea was to create an alternative to the corporate media,
right?
And it all started here in L.A. And
right.
How many people more or less were involved when it first started, when IMC L.A. first started?
Well, actually, we had so many people out here that we had hundreds by the time of the convention, because it was. We filled a whole floor of the Patriotic Hall downtown, which is, only a few hundred yards from the Staples Center where the Democratic Convention took place, and from the protest area right outside the convention. So we had a lot more people then, actually, but in terms of those who stayed here in L.A., we varied, various figures. We've been up to, 40, 50, and then sometimes down in the 20s, but we keep it online. We keep it open. We have the center column, which we select particular stories, usually stuff that was posted by independents, just outside people.
How many people do you have currently working on the website?
We probably have about 15 people working now. And we have some pretty good editors work all the time on selecting stories for the center column. And we have a lot of independent reporters out there that we don't always even know all these people. They're activists involved in whatever cause they are, and they post things on the newswire. Anyone can post interactive comments and actual stories on the newswire. We will keep them up, but we do edit out, hate comments and stuff that are really not relevant to our mission.
As an alternative to the corporate media, do you find yourself the recipient of a lot of hate hate comments.
Oh, yeah, there's been what we call the, you know, the spammers.
People see you as a threat.
Yes, and there's certain people we suspect that they're corporately sponsored, if not paid actively, to just sit online and post, you know, things negative and make personal attacks on our people that do report alternative news stories that you won't get on the mainstream media. And we have had a troll patrol, as we call it.
What's a troll patrol?
Troll patrol is catching those trolls, and we hide those posts when we think. It's usually in the comment section. You can post a story and then comment. Anybody can comment on that story on the newswire. And we've had problems in the past with trolls just trying to, you know, disrupt the whole newswire, and we've had to hide them. It's been better lately, it seems like. We've got, you know, after a while when the posts get hidden, they've gotten discouraged, maybe moved on.
Why do you think people perceive independent media as a threat? I mean, you guys aren't this heavily armed force, you know. I mean, what is it that you do that's...
Well, the establishment has always put a high value that most people don't realize, not just on weaponry to keep themselves in power, but propaganda. Hmm. I mean, that's always been the case with the powerful, and the ideal is if they could control all of the media and all of the message, then they have a much better chance of controlling the large number of population that they are, you know, attempting to control. I mean, if they don't have ideas that are contrary to those at the top, if you think of society somewhat like a pyramid, you got this small group at the very top that's very narrow-based and has a singular, you know, very small purpose, identified purpose, as opposed to the lower part of the pyramid, which is much broader but not as united. Mm. And they're hoping to keep them divided amongst themselves and not thinking about who's on top. And, of course, the best way to do that would be to control all the media message. You know that many totalitarian societies have always done that. They don't allow any independent press. Well, here, even the founders of the Constitution thought that it was important that they have a free press, and that was one of the first... Well, it's in the First Amendment, actually, is the right to free speech, and it also includes free press.
Sounds like
it's
a good idea.
It's so fundamental. But, of course, what has happened is more and more of our purported democracy has become beholden to corporate interests because it becomes so expensive to run, to be elected to either the legislature, Congress, especially on the national level, or the presidency.
Plus all these media organizations are consolidating their forces, too.
Right, and the media has been controlled by the corporations, and they consolidated them into smaller and smaller groups. Of course, that's better for them. They can control much easier if they have fewer different companies running everything, and that's exactly what's happened with, like, Viacom, you know, Disney, and all these corporations that control the network. So you basically get the same news. If you flip the evening news broadcast nationally from CBS, I think they're all on at the same time, but you could tape the three of them and then play them, and you'd virtually get the same stories, maybe in a slightly different order, but it'd almost be the same script.
Yeah.
And that, you know, the corporate people like that, as long as it's their story that's being repeated.
Sure.
And we don't, and a lot of people are dissatisfied and want to get it messaged out. We don't have the money that they have to broadcast, but things like Kill Radio Online here and LA Independent Media and all the other 90-plus media centers in all over the world give everybody an opportunity to hear news that you wouldn't hear otherwise and get stories that you don't get otherwise.
Well, how do you support yourself?
We have done fundraisers, films, and so forth, similar to what Kill Radio does, music events, and we've gotten some donations. We always encourage people to contribute because it helps keep the site open. Of course, it costs money to have band space, and it costs money to have the equipment and so forth. So,
how can people contribute to... it's indiemedia.org, right?
Yeah, la.indiemedia.org is our website here in Los Angeles, and on there there's a place to send donations. PayPal is a button on the thing. You can donate money that way.
And do you operate as a nonprofit?
Yes, we're a nonprofit, and we actually are tax deductible through a common nonprofit corporation that we our contributions are channeled through, so that people actually can tax deduct their contributions. We appreciate it when they can do it. We may be having more fundraisers soon too, and we hope.
Yeah, I was just going to ask. Are there any indie media?
We probably will be doing a film, another film presentation. We've done like the ones on the oil crisis, the Iraq War, of course, and things like that. We've seen it work; those seem to work well. We've had booths at the like the Sunset Junction Fair, along with Kill Radio, to raise money. So we're hoping that we'll be coming up with some other event pretty soon, I think.
Is there any one issue going on in the world right now that you think really is a central focus for the IMC right now?
Well, for L.A., we've almost become like the media of record for the whole controversy over the Save Our State people and the immigrant rights movement, you know, in terms of this whole anti-immigration patrols that, you know, vigilantes have been doing down at the Mexican border. We've had a lot of postings, a lot of coverage of it, a lot of photos of all the protests, not only at the border, but in different areas where the issues come up, for instance, the Costa Mesa City Council. So that's an area where there's a big controversy. They were arrested one pro-immigrant rights speaker for speaking overtime when, in fact, the I think they had video that showed that he actually had not completed his allotted 3 minutes, the typical time allowed in a meeting, and they were actually, because of some of the reporting that was posted by just people that are activists that were at the meeting, we got that in our center column, and of course we get a lot of response, including from SOS people. That's so got the biggest response is that story of late.
Arrested for speaking over
time in Costa Mesa because the mayor there didn't want any opposition. He was one of those sponsoring an anti-immigration resolution. He actually wants to train the Costa Mesa police, as I understand it, to enforce immigration laws and go out and arrest people on the grounds that they're illegal. In other words, becoming sort of a local immigration agency. And he's under some investigation, apparently by an independent prosecutor, as that he may have violated the laws by failing to conduct the city council meeting fairly when he cut off the speaker before his time had run. We've had other cities where there's been unjustified, we believe, arrest of immigrants. There was one story we had last year of a guy shot by an off-duty police officer, and he was an Arab immigrant, I believe. That was a story that probably would not have come out at all had it not been for indie media.
Well, I was thinking, you know, because of California's geographic location and its economic situation, the immigration issue has been an issue that's been of interest for many, many years. But since the start of the so-called war on terror, I would imagine that some things have changed rather rapidly in terms of worker movements and immigration, and especially in Southern California.
Oh yeah, I think there's a lot. You know, there's more immigrants here, and I think as the economy is a squeeze on a lot of people, you know, what unfortunately happens is instead of looking up at the top of the pyramid where the problem's coming from, people tend to look down and blame others below them.
Yeah,
because maybe they're weaker. You know, the people at the top they can't get to. So
well, and there's also been this developing, you know, culture of the foreigner as the enemy.
Right. I mean, that's a result, of course, of the Iraq war and the propaganda overall of terrorism being these foreign elements. And the fact that's been used by these vigilantes, they're saying that, well, that's the illegal immigration represents a threat of terrorism because these people could come in under the guise of being immigrant workers and actually be, the goal be to do some terrorist act. We've never actually had immigrants from the Asian or Latin American countries that I know of, which is by far the largest group, obviously, from the West Coast because of the geographic locations, you know, being near Latin America and the closest to Asia. and Asian Pacific Island that have been directly involved in any kind of violent, illegal, organized activity here in the country that could be classified as terrorist. In fact, nothing from the Middle East immigrants that I'm aware of, the ones that were accused of having done it, were people that were on a watch list, supposedly, that came into this country, even though they were on an FBI watch list. They're already known terrorists, the 21 hijackers, and yet they claim they couldn't find them, even though some of them were living right off outside of Washington, D.C. It makes you wonder, you know, whether or not they just didn't look the other way on this kind of thing, and because they wanted an excuse. They always need an enemy. It seems like right. There's always a war. The promise of peace never is fulfilled. Every war, when it's over, is people think, well, now we can get back to domestic issues. We don't have to spend all this money. And instead, the defense budgets grow. They don't decrease. We, in fact, there's a film out. That's one of them that we might show as an, perhaps as an in-media fundraiser. I think it's called... Why We Fight, which is based on the old World War II films that were made actually for propaganda to get people stirred up again to fight against Germany and Japan. But now we're talking about why we fight in these continuous wars like Vietnam, and then, you know, now we're in the Middle East in so many different conflicts.
Well, it's like pharmaceuticals. I mean, the money's not in the cure. The money's in the medication. Oh, right. So, you know, it's in the best interest of the people of power to keep us in a sort of ongoing war,
right.
and winning these sort of pseudo-battles, but never putting an end to the conflict, because
right.
it's the steady flow of money through the industrial complex, you know.
That's what
yada, yada, yada.
Yeah, that's what they... In fact, Eisenhower, which is seems like a strange person to have warned it, but that's what he was... He was the one whose speechwriters coined that phrase, the military-industrial complex. Mm. And I heard that Congressional was supposed to have been in there, but they edited it out because, probably for obvious reasons, they didn't want to piss off you know, Congress at that time. This is when Eisenhower was retiring, and he'd been a career military officer, obviously the commanding general of the Allied forces in World War II, and president for 8 years as a Republican, the first Republican president in some 20 years since the New Deal. Rather strange to have him be the one, but he was the one who actually sounded the warning about the growing threat, and that is being used, that film footage is being used in the new film, Why We Fight. It was also the lead in the Oliver Stone film, JFK, that Eisenhower speech. But, you know, now they've come up with the perfect enemy, it seems like. Before, you had whatever country it was, whether it was Germany, Japan, Vietnam, Korea, Soviet Union. They were organized states.
Right.
And if you defeated them, you couldn't very well argue, well, we need to keep people in arms to fight an enemy that we had clearly vanquished.
Right.
For instance, Japan, you know, once it had been destroyed. With terrorists, they don't have a nation. They don't have an organized government. You don't usually know where they are, assumedly, or otherwise supposedly you'd go after them like bin Laden and his group. So you can always, if they in fact are designing this to keep their profits going in arms manufacturing, it is the perfect enemy, because you can never actually say that it's defeated, and you don't know where it is because you don't know where they are. So how can you say they're defeated? They don't have a nation state. You can't say, well, we've just yeah. vanquished them. So
and
it's the perfect enemy now. You don't have to worry about war ever becoming obsolete.
Even beyond that, the longer you continue to fight them, the more they grow in numbers.
Right. Well, yeah. You actually create more of the problem. Well, it's not really to them, it's the solution. It does supposedly is the problem. Yeah, you're actually creating more terrorists because, for instance...
So you'll never run out of people to fight.
No, I mean, in fact, they seem to do everything deliberately to create more. They had that Abu Ghraib prison, right, and the scandal over that. I mean, that had been kind of the Bastille of Iraq under Saddam Hussein's regime. You would think that if we were liberating the country, the first thing you would want to tear down would be that prison as a symbol of the old regime's tyranny. Instead, we just put the prisoners that we captured, that is the United States and British captured, into that prison So instead of saying that you're establishing freedom, you're just changing torturers from the Hussein Bath people to the U.S. and British. I mean,
Not to mention Guantanamo Bay.
Guantanamo. Yeah. You know, you place it in Cuba, which is supposedly an enemy country, the only threatened communist country, I guess. We seem to be more worried about Cuba than we are about China. You know, China has over a billion people, and Cuba has less than 9 million, but with the logic of, you know, this that mentality of the, again, the military-industrial complex, they're more of a threat, and of course...
Well, they have stockpiles of exploding cigars, so...
Right, you know, all that kind of stuff. We can't have any trade with them, you know, again, billions of trade with China. But that's where you put it on this one little, actually a symbol of imperialism of the United States. We captured that part of Cuba and kept it even after Cuba was granted independence. I guess in the, that would have been in the 1920s, that Guantanamo Bay, and that is Gitmo, where we keep prisoners, you know, and instead of it demonstrating democracy by having a trial or so forth under...
Yeah, many of the people there haven't even been charged.
They don't charge them. They keep them incommunicado. They're not allowed to have attorneys.
I saw an interesting documentary the other day. I wish I could remember what it was called, but basically it was a British documentary, and they had designed these jail cells to represent what Guantanamo Bay is like. And they took 7 volunteers to be put under the command, be put under the watch of these retired army generals who were trained in how to handle people at Guantanamo Bay. And the idea was they were going to be there for a week, and then, you know, report how well they were able to do it. Not one of the 7 people who volunteered was able to last more than 48 hours before they backed out of the experiment.
Wow.
Because of the various peculiar things that are done there that we do with, you know, that we've been apparently doing to people for what, like 4 years now.
Wow, ever since
that aren't technically torture. But, you know, doing things like not allowing anyone to sleep for more than 2 hours at a time, just getting them up and making them move beds.
Yeah.
But doing this on a regular basis so that they eventually go insane.
Right.
And then the various, you know, water torture. And one of the things I thought was particularly macabre was tying someone's hands to their feet and tying them to the floor and putting them in a white room completely closed off with headphones on and white noise. Just like...
Like a static, constant static?
For like 8 hours. I mean...
Yeah, you can do all kinds of psychological...
It sounds like I'm making it up, you know, but apparently I'm not.
Well, the bad thing, the worst thing is not... the point that I try to make on many posts on indie media is it's not just the people in Guantanamo and the Bush administration is doing this. It's the fact that there isn't more demand to stop it. From either, you know, not only from the leadership of the Democratic Party, but a lot of people rank and file. You know, they figure it's not their problem, and these guys are bad guys, so they deserve it. And,
well, and without
and
the
that's
corporate,
what allows it to go on.
Without the corporate media really reporting on it, your average person, I don't go around thinking about Guantanamo Bay every day because it's not presented to me. I turn on the news, and it's like, you know, why is this sea lion on top of this Honda? Film at 11.
Yeah, important news item often is stuff like Britney Spears holding her baby in her lap, driving her car or something, you know.
So
who's going to get the Oscar? You know, this is more important than that. You know,
and, you know, there's a time and a place for all that stuff, but you would think that something like, you know, uncharged people being tortured for 4 years, that would be in the news at least on like every other day.
It's only on the news at all because most of those stories broke through some non-corporate media
source. It
may not have been one of the indie media centers. I take credit for everything, but many others, you know, the salon.com, any of the other blogs that are good, any of those got that out, just like this latest torture film of the British in their area of control where they beat up Iraqi prisoners. So it's coming from independent media, and then it gets picked up by the mainstream media. And that's one of the things the indie media movement has really changed the news. The little bit of news that we do get that's real on the corporate media is only because they're having to respond to all the blogs and independent medias like LA Indie Media and all the others, because by nature they're competitive, and they know that if enough of these stories get out from just independent sources, people will stop. They're already losing audience.
They don't want people to turn off the TV.
They don't
want
them to turn off altogether.
Yeah.
So they have to salvage just a little bit. So they're forced to put some of these stories on.
So I guess that's one of the objectives of the independent media, is to pressure the corporate media to inject
exactly.
a little bit of honesty into their work.
That's what it is. If you don't have any pressure, they certainly would not do anything. And if they had their likes, they would never report any of this at all. As badly and distorted and as limited as they do report it, at least there's some light coming out, you know, on it. And you just wonder if we can motivate enough people to say no, that this has got to stop. I worry that this is maybe we're living. I imagine that there's people in Nazi Germany, you know, that just went along with the whole flow of things in the same way, not worrying about, there were some Jewish neighbors that we had a few weeks ago, and they disappeared, and God, I don't know where they are, but it's not my problem.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that kind of thing. And they say the Poles are evil, so I guess we'll have to start war with Poland. And you can just see that the average German population could have acted in some of the same ways that a lot of the mainstream public in the United States is. And it worries me that when there's not more reaction, that there's not more people protesting and being outraged by, you know, by what's been done by the government for the especially the last 4 years. I mean, it's been going on for a long time. My theory, in fact, you know, I've worked a long time, and as well as I'm on the air, I'll get back to what I've said for many years, is that this whole problem of the military-industrial complex goes a long ways back. I just mentioned Eisenhower in 61 warned about it. There were many of us back in the 70s when we started, and 80s, started getting interested in what had happened with the assassinations in the 1960s. The evidence was turning towards, the CIA being involved in that. I think we've got substantial evidence that the 63 assassination of President John Kennedy was orchestrated by CIA elements. And there was warnings given by many of us then that this military-industrial complex, if it can remove presidents, I think they were also involved in Nixon's and the Watergate affair. I know they were. There's a great book about that that's very seldom published, very seldom talked about, Secret Agenda, that talks about the CIA involvement in the whole Watergate affair. So they're manipulating governments, either killing presidents or having them removed by manufacturing, controlling the flow of evidence that gets into the press through sources like the mainstream corporate media like the Washington Post, and things were getting out of control, and for the most part we were just labeled as conspiracy theorists or paranoid or so forth, and in fact it's all panned out, and in fact that's what a lot of people are worried about, this uncontrolled intelligence complex, that they're spying on, the whole thing about the National Intelligence Agency now spying on people and tapping their wires. Well, Bamberg, his name was, wrote a book in the 80s about the NSA and revealed that in fact they have been for years recording all telephone conversations. Now, not everything comes to the attention of the national security apparatus, but it's selected phrases that will key them to put that in a watch list. So, you know, it's been a growing problem for decades, and because it has been ignored, we're in the situation that we are now, where we're really facing a danger to democracy and liberties from this very powerful military-industrial and media complex that basically seeks to control information and control thought and towards their narrow goals.
Do you think the IMC is being watched?
Oh, I'm absolutely sure that it is. You know, in fact, we've known that there's been raids. Seattle got raided. I think San Francisco's office has been raided before because they allege that there's somebody posting on it. Of course, we're an open news wire, so we've had to kind of watch for that. If there's somebody that looks like it's somebody advocating some kind of terrorist act, that we would hide the post, and we stopped keeping a record of the URLs, I think, because we didn't want the FBI to then come in and say they could get that. they can always get anything off the line anyway. I mean, the net is an open postcard, like, you know, anybody could read
sure.
it.
Yeah.
So you got, you know, you have to assume that they, yeah, there are elements that are watching, certainly in the media. I'm sure they see the threat. We've seen police reports where they considered, you know, peace demonstrators equated that, or the peace movement against the Iraq war, mm-hmm. as a terrorist threat. You know, local police as well as federal. So
yeah, I know. I read something today. It was an op-ed piece about that very issue, and it was, mm-hmm. the guy was saying how, you know, 50 people standing on the street with yellow ribbons, that's support for a war. But a million people marching on the street, those are violent protesters.
Yeah, it's all how you characterize it. Well, look at what happened in New Orleans when you had the people that were so desperate, and they knew, and now they're admitting it, they knew immediately that the dikes would not hold. Mm-hmm. The levees wouldn't hold after the hurricane, and yet they didn't do anything to rush any aid, or very little, to the people, knowing that they couldn't get out, and the floods would come. And, of course, when they did come and people were desperate, the coverage, I think, in one story was a picture of whites, and they said these are smart people using ingenuity to survive the disaster.
Oh,
where they
right.
were collecting food. And there was another picture of virtually the same thing being done, but they were black people,
yeah.
and they were characterized as looters.
Yeah.
You know, it's this is a great illustration of the problem with corporate media is, you know, this is the propaganda they put out when, in fact, you know, both of them were doing the basic thing, were trying to survive for them. I mean, there were a few people that take advantage, you know, of any situation, but there are just as probably as equally many whites as blacks that were in that category. But the large majority of people were just doing anything desperately to survive.
And the real criminals in that situation were the people who were warned about what was going to happen
yeah.
with the storm, the people who we rely upon, FEMA and the federal government,
yeah.
and we're seeing more and more news stories demonstrating that a lot more was known than the corporate media was telling us was known.
Right.
And even Republicans are coming out and saying, you know, this is unacceptable. I mean, talk about, like, news stories that you can't keep down and pressuring, you know, the top to finally be a little bit honest. But this seems to be a running theme in this administration, the idea of knowing that disaster is going to strike, or in some cases even being involved in the disaster going to strike, depending on, you know, what your take is on 9/11, and not really doing anything about it, and then sort of later getting caught having this information and saying, oh, well, yeah, we had this information, but we didn't know how to use it, or it came too late, or we didn't trust the source, or whatever, you know?
Too many people fall for that. That's what I worry about. It's just as I said, we presented substantial evidence over a number of years that the official conclusion in the assassinations of John Kennedy, Robert Kennedy, were faulty and needed reinvestigation, and for some were done, but largely it was ignored, and this problem is aggravated. Largely Watergate, the implications of the CIA and that were overlooked. When Iran-Contra came, you know, a lot of people overlooked the obvious deceit that went on there. And so they've grown stronger largely because not enough was done to hold them accountable. And of course now they think they can just about get away with anything. They've even said they've basically said this administration has got to the point where they're so arrogant they've said we don't care. Yeah, Bush, when this NSA scandal broke, he says, yeah, I've done it and I will continue to keep tapping people without consulting, even with the terrorist court, or whatever that court is called, the National Intelligence Court, that was supposed to approve and did approve. It pretty much gives a blank check to any application for a wiretap. But he won't even use that because their standards are so low they can't even pass that.
Mm-hmm.
But he says, I don't care. I'm going to do it because I have the power. I'm the president. And
that's exactly what Nixon
said. And go screw yourself.
Right?
Yeah, but Nixon
if,
said
if,
that.
If
the difference
president
was,
does it, yeah. then it's not illegal.
Yeah. Basically, the difference was, of course, he had a non-Nixon controlled Congress, you know. Now you have a pro-Bush controlled Congress. So if it had been that situation, then you would never have seen the Watergate scandal come to fore. You would never have had there was no effective opposition. And the opposition
right.
that you have from the Democrats is so weak because they're also controlled by the corporation. They're so beholden to them that they virtually do anything on any issue. If the administration It puts any kind of firm stance, they backed down on the Supreme Court nominations. They didn't even try the one tool they have, which is filibuster, because they're placing all their chips, of course, on thinking that they can win the congressional election. And in fact, it's a very interesting theory, because that's the pendulum theory, and a lot of us are doubtful about that things will swing back. Now, in fact, there's an interesting analogy between this and the early 60s. When Kennedy defeated Nixon narrowly in a disputed election in 1960, that's somewhat analogous to 2000 when the opposite, Bush defeated supposedly Gore in an obviously disputed election. And then in 62 and 64, Kennedy and then Johnson won a lot bigger than Bush, though, in the congressional and the presidential election. And then in 66 began the reversal with first Reagan being elected here in governor, and many Republicans, including Romney, who was the father of one of the current favorites to run in 2008, who's now governor of Massachusetts. At that time, it was his father, who was governor of Michigan, won in 66. And that was a pendulum swing. And, of course, then in 68, Bobby Kennedy was assassinated. LBJ had to resign or not run for re-election because of McCarthy and Kennedy. And then Nixon got elected. So there was the pendulum swing, and then you got Reagan and so forth. Here, the Democratic Party mainline theory is, well, this is going to be a swing this way. We're going to take this election in 06, just like the Republicans did in 66, and we'll turn things around.
So that the
middle of a war, the Vietnam War then, Iraq War, that's their theory. So they don't do anything to rock the boat. They're saying, well, we don't want to do anything too controversial because we think that we can just run on the theory that we're not Bush and the Republicans, and people will vote for us as the only alternative.
And right now, Bush's approval rating is something like 39%, yet I don't see any evidence of the pendulum swinging back anytime soon, certainly not in this state of perpetual war.
Well, it's perpetual war, plus I don't think they're honest elections. I mean, they don't vote by paper ballots now. They vote by these machines. There's no paper record of it. And it's already been demonstrated that there's very suspicious vote counts in many of these these computer-run ballots, including, of course, the famous Ohio situation, in which the suspicion that they might have flipped votes when maybe it was
Kerry. Yeah, actually brought Kerry a media file in today to play after our interview that addresses that very.
So
very
I,
thing.
You know, that's going to be an interesting. But this is going to be the Rosetta Stone of the mainstream Democratic so-called response to the Bush agenda, in that can they recapture Congress or even come close to it this year and governors. If they don't, then where are they going to be at for the next election? You know, they're not able to stop anything now because they don't have the numbers in Congress. If they switched it around, then it would be big trouble, assumedly, for Bush for the next 2 years, and that would be a good platform to then run for presidency. The same way in 58, the Democratics swept out a lot of the Eisenhower Republicans, which helped Kennedy in 1960. So that's the theory. But there's many of us who doubt that that is, because it's not the same situation. We had a more honest election then. It wasn't as corporate controlled. Now it is, we believe. And there's many people that think that the only way you're going to stop this is a massive movement of people that demand that the Bush administration and those and the people thinking, that includes when we say Bush, the Democrats who kind of go along to get along, like Feinstein and Jane Harman and so forth,
leave
office. You're going to have massive demonstrations like they've had in Eastern European countries.
So you think the pendulum is actually, the people are going to have to grab the pendulum and pull it back.
Pull it back, exactly. That's what the World Can't Wait movement has said, and some of the demonstrations, including the counter State of the Union address on January 31st. Many other movements now. I think it's got to come from the streets. It's got to come from organizing masses of people. It's got to come from the unions and people that should be in unions organized. It's got to be a unified movement of people that are being screwed by the policies. And people have got to realize that. I think this is going to be the Rosetta Stone. The Democratic Party's alternative method is going through the traditional electoral ballot list. They think they can retake Congress in this election, like the Republicans well, they didn't retake Congress, but they basically reduced the LBJ majority and eventually led to Nixon's election in 68. Now, time will tell because November will come eventually. Sooner than later, and we'll see whether that theory is right or whether the movement that many of us think is necessary is right.
Well, Art, you'll keep us honest in the meantime.
Right. Absolutely.
Thanks for sitting and talking with us, and keep up the good work. Everyone should go to indymedia.org.
Yeah, la.indymedia.
La.indymedia.
La. Now, there's sf.org, and right. la and indymedia.org gets you to the global website. So that's fine, too. Go to all of them.
Thank you so much, Art.
You bet.